From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Another legislative session of the Illinois General Assembly is history. Late last month, lawmakers adjourned after passing a more than $50 billion discretionary budget, which Governor J.B. Pritzker then signed into law last week. Joining me now to talk about what lawmakers got done this spring and what remains yet to do is the Speaker of the Illinois House of Representatives. Emmanuel Chris Welch is a Democrat from Hillside. He joins me now. Mr. Speaker, welcome back to the 21st Show. Mr. Speaker, I think you might be muted there on our Zoom connection.
Brian, thank you for having me.
All right. Thanks for being here. And listeners, you are welcome to join our conversation as ever at 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. All right, Mr. Speaker, what would you say is the most significant thing in that state budget I just referred to that Governor Pritzker signed into law last week?
Well, I think the most significant thing in that state budget is everything that's in it. It's a reflection of our values. It's a moral document. And, you know, if you look at that budget in its entirety, it's a true reflection of our morals. I mean, it invests in safer communities. It invests in healthcare access. It invests in early education with the Smart Start program. It strengthens our K through 12 schools and our higher ed universities. You know, it's truly a reflection of the things that we believe in.
You know, Republicans, you probably can anticipate this. They say the budget includes what they call gimmicks in order to appear balanced on paper. And we certainly know there are revenue challenges. The income tax receipts have declined from previous years. There's certainly not that federal assistance that the state got during the pandemic. What do you say that this is a budget full of gimmicks to look balanced on paper?
Well, first of all, Republicans have criticized the previous four balanced budgets, and all those previous four balanced budgets have done is led the state to 8 credit upgrades. This is a 5th balanced budget in a row that Bloomberg News has already positively talked about and continues to look at Illinois in a favorable light as a result of this 5th balanced budget in a row. This is a budget that Illinoisans across this state can be proud of. We have to put partisan rhetoric aside. I mean, we are talking about a group of people who've yet to put a budget on the table that we can ever look at. I've never seen the Republicans present a budget, but they find one or two things to nitpick about and criticize budgets that Democrats put forth. And what we've done is successfully put this state on a path toward fiscal stability.
Well, one of those things that they have criticized, or at least some have criticized, are salary increases for lawmakers. Last year, I believe the base salary for a state legislator was just under $73,000. Now it's going to be, or is, more than $89,000. How do you justify that to taxpayers?
Well, first of all, let me say Republicans are criticizing it, but I don't know any of them who have rejected the pay raises. Why is that? Because many of them thanked me years ago when I filed a lawsuit against Governor Rauner and his then comptroller for illegally stopping our pay. Many of them quietly were coming to me, thanking me. Many of them are thanking me now for standing by court decisions that say it's unconstitutional to waive the COLA. We are going to follow the law. We're going to honor our Constitution. And that's what we're doing. And that's another point that I want to make about Republicans finding one or two things to come up with a talking point and criticize, rather than vote for something that they know is constitutionally sound, that's balanced, that lifts up every single community across this state. And oh, it actually has a number of things in it that they fought for.
And look, I should tell listeners, in a previous iteration of my journalistic career, I wrote a column and I've argued in the past that higher pay for lawmakers might be something worth considering, because otherwise you get a legislature, instead of sort of more everyday working people, it's filled with real estate agents and bankers and other people with jobs where they can take significant time off. But a 22% increase in 6 months. Can you, again, what to the worker out there who is not enjoying that level of pay raise in the past 6 months, how do you justify that?
Well, let me first level set. What recently happened was the legislature did receive its annual COLA increase. Back in January, for the first time since 2007, the 102nd General Assembly approved raises for state legislators, constitutional officers, for everyone in state office for the first time since 2007. As you have written about, Brian, in the past, if you're going to recruit good talent across the state, if you're going to have good people sign up for these jobs and spend time away from their families week after week, you have to have a competitive salary. And we tried to address that in January in the 102nd General Assembly. And so the raises were voted on by the previous General Assembly for the first time since 2007. I don't know anyone who's worked in a job that didn't get a raise since 2007.
There was a small amount of this cost of living adjustment that was too high, right? And somebody pointed this out in the debate. The governor ended up having to use his reduction veto power, I believe it's called, to reduce the amount to comply with the law. Why did no one catch that incorrect amount as the budget was being put together?
You know, it was a technical error. It was addressed, and the governor didn't have to do anything, but he did. He addressed a technical thing that was not done intentionally on anyone's part. And the COLA remains intact, and we can constitutionally continue to receive COLAs, as courts have said.
I do want to, the reason I'm pressing on this a little bit is, I guess the larger issue I'm trying to get at is that, you know, you have talked about a different kind of process in the General Assembly. And here was still a budget that's passed in the middle of the night, maintaining what, you know, I've heard referred to as those sort of undergraduate work habits. I wonder if we'll ever have a budget that passes at, you know, say 2 p.m. and that will have been out there for the public to scrutinize for days and days or weeks, potentially, before it's enacted.
Brian, let me take issue with the way you phrased your question. I think that's poor journalism. But let me say this. It doesn't take into account anything that we've done the last 3 years to address the concerns about bringing more light into this process. We intentionally engaged in a process. The House did not give the Senate an appropriations vehicle. We intentionally embarked on what we called a trust exercise, where the Senate would pass us a budget, an agreed budget, on a Senate bill, which under our Constitution has to, in the House, sit for 3 readings on 3 separate days before it can get passed. In previous years, budgets have come over from one chamber or another, and the minute you get it, you put it on a board and you pass it. We have tried to address the concerns from members of the Democratic caucus, members in the Republican caucus, folks like you in the media, and create a process that would give more time. The budget was posted about 8 o'clock on Wednesday night. People had the rest of Wednesday night to read it. They had all day Thursday, all day Friday, and we passed it at about 2:30 in the morning, as opposed to coming back at 10, 12 o'clock on Saturday afternoon, a holiday weekend when folks wanted to go home. But that budget was out there for 3 days to read, more than any budget that in my 11 years in the General Assembly. And so, yes, I take issue with the way you frame that question, because I'm proud of the fact that we slowed the process down very intentionally to give folks more time to read this budget. And rather than read it, the Republicans took the budget and wrapped it in a bow. But what I suggest is people use the changes that we put in place, read the budget, and let's have an honest discussion about it.
Well, I'll take your criticism I will think about that, but I will say, yes, it is an improvement over the past. I think other states have even more time. Maybe we'll get there in the future. I want to shift, and let me just take a moment actually to remind listeners, this is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are speaking with the Speaker of the Illinois House of Representatives, Chris Welch, about the state budget and other issues that Illinois lawmakers discussed and worked on in their spring legislative session, which concluded last month. I do want to talk about another topic, and that is, Your predecessor in the role of Speaker spent decades looking out for the interests of Chicago, being Illinois' biggest economic engine and most important city, arguably. He worked closely with the succession of mayors there, even those he did not support in seeking office. How are you thinking about your relationship with the leader of Chicago, Mayor Johnson?
Well, first of all, the new mayor is a dear friend of mine. I have a great relationship with him, and I wish him nothing but the best personally, but certainly professionally. I think if he does well, the city of Chicago is going to do well. And the city of Chicago is the economic engine of this state. And I think it's critical that we do everything we can to help him and the city of Chicago be successful. But in my role as speaker, I'm speaker of the House, and that's a chamber that has people from all over the state. And my commitment is to every other mayor across the state that it is to Mayor Johnson. That's why I fought so hard. Sometimes it felt like I was the only voice fighting for increasing LGDF funding. But I want to see Mayor Johnson successful, just like mayors all across the state.
LGDF, we don't have to get into that for our listeners. It's a share of taxes that go to local governments. He did campaign on this idea of a transaction tax, which would require a change in state law. I've read you and Senate President Harmon reportedly rejected that idea. Is there room for that in the future, or where are you on that?
You know, the mayor of Chicago is a great friend of mine. And just like you have great friends, Brian, that you agree with on many things, you probably disagree on many things. And that's one that I would disagree with the mayor on if he were to put that forth. I have not heard Mayor Johnson put that forth. That may have been some campaign rhetoric, but I haven't been approached by Mayor Johnson about anything like that. But that's certainly one that I think we would disagree on at this point.
All right, we're going to take a call from a listener now at 800-222-9455. Our time is relatively short. So, Paul, in Urbana, briefly, what is your question for Speaker Welch?
Well, I just wanted to comment on the controversy about the health care for undocumented residents and workers. And I just think it just opens up the broader argument that I don't hear made enough, that health care early is always less expensive than waiting for it to get worse. And on the transaction tax.
Okay, well, Paul, I appreciate the call. It's one topic at a time. Mr. Speaker, do you want to talk about the program for undocumented immigrants and those on green cards, the health care program that saw ballooning costs? It was expected to be tens of millions, and then it ended up being near $1 billion.
Well, you heard a number of $1 billion being talked about because that's a potential number that it could have costed if we had not put guardrails in place. And, you know, there's a lot of misleading partisan rhetoric around this issue. It's one of the couple of things that Republicans are using as an excuse for why they didn't vote for the budget. But here's the truth, Brian. People seek emergency medical care regardless of their immigration status. And when those folks who seek emergency care go to an emergency room, we all pay those extremely high costs of what it costs to go to an emergency room. The Health Benefits for Immigrant Adults program addresses this challenge specifically, but it needed smart cost controls in place. And that's what the legislature gave to the administration. The administration has said with those tools, they believe that they can properly manage this program efficiently. And it's not going to cost anywhere near $1 billion like Republicans continue to use in their talking point.
I do want to ask about some of the things that didn't get done this spring. One of the big issues that people were talking a lot about is changes to the state's biometric information privacy laws. There's a lot of concern among businesses about huge verdicts that have been won by class action lawsuits in that. White Castle is facing billions of dollars in fees, or I should say a judgment for violations of this law. What held that up, and what are the prospects for making those changes in the future?
Well, we thought we were close. I mean, we thought we were there, actually. We had a bill that I thought we were going to put on the board that addressed some of the issues that were raised by the Supreme Court. But then the last 24 to 48 hours, we did hear some concerns expressed by the business community. And those concerns should be heard. So we slowed it down. We didn't put it on the board. Hopefully here over the summer and into the fall, before we go back to veto session, we can continue to have conversations and collaborate and come up with a solution that works for everyone.
Just about 1 minute remaining in our time together. There was another law passed limiting the court venue for constitutional challenges to state law. The bigger picture here issue, I think, is that Democratic priorities in the General Assembly, notably the end of cash bail and the changes to the sale of assault weapons in Illinois, have faced a huge scattering of court challenges across the state. Why was that important to limit jurisdiction to Cook County and Sangamon County for these constitutional challenges? And only about 20 seconds, unfortunately.
Well, what we saw was there were a handful of attorneys that were abusing the court process, intentionally making the Attorney General's office run all over the state, particularly during the height of the pandemic, to defend the governor's COVID executive orders. What we did here was specifically narrow it to constitutional issues. Those cases, if the state is sued in constitutional issues, will be brought in Springfield, where the capital is, or Chicago.
All right.
We believe that was fair, and it was the right thing to do.
Speaker Welch, thank you for being with us today. I'm afraid we are out of time. Appreciate your time. More to come after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us.